Disco.
D-I-S-C-O. D-I-S-C-O. It's D.
Divisive.
I. Interesting. S.
Star Trek.
C. Contentious. It's O.
I think I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Oh, yes.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Turn Backward, a podcast from Great Britain, where we discuss all things Star Trek. With me tonight, to my left, is Gemma Turland.
Hello.
In front of her is her husband, Will Turland.
Hello.
To his left is another man, Rick Everson.
Hello.
And in front of him is me, Rick Palmer. Four people. And in this episode, we're discussing episode 3 of Star Trek Discovery, which is called Context is for Kings.
Indeed. And I think this might be my favourite episode of Discovery so far. I actually really enjoyed this one.
It's definitely in my top 4.
Yeah.
Yes, me too.
At the time of recording, we have only had 4.
Yes, yeah.
By the time you hear this, we will have had 5, so I need to explain that. Oh, that's the best jokes need explaining.
So, yeah, so the first 2 episodes pretty much kind of set up the series. Rather than being a traditional pilot, it set up the context.
It's the prologue for Michael Burnham, I think, more than anything, isn't it? So, and a little bit Saru.
Episode 3 picks up 6 months after the events of the first 2 episodes. Burnham's on a shuttlecraft with 3 other people, 3 other prisoners.
Yeah.
Interestingly, all 3 of those actors were in The Expanse. I noticed them from.
Oh, were they? I didn't realise that.
Yes. They're called Stone, Cold, and Psycho, as apparently they're unofficial names.
So
they're going to a mining colony, I think, because a vein of dilithium went piezoelectric and vaporized a bunch of miners or something like that. They're going through a weird part of space where there's like electric bugs on they go through an area of space with these electric bugs. The pilot has to go out and fix the problem, and the pilot dies.
Yeah.
I was pretty shocked by that, I have to admit.
Yeah, me too.
Because it all seemed to be a setup in the first place.
Yeah, it seemed to be an engineered situation so that Lorca could get Burnham onto a ship. So did he kill the pilot?
I've been thinking about it. I don't think they're even real prisoners. I think they're actors.
Do you reckon?
That's my theory.
Well, they're actors, but do you mean they're actors in Discovery or they're actors?
Yeah. I don't think they're even part of the prison system, and I'm almost certain that pilot was beamed away straight off.
Yeah, I think
it's like some Charlie Kaufman thing where you're playing an actor and you're an actor.
Yeah, so they're actors playing actors playing prisoners. Actors.
So she beat the poop out of.
Some actors.
Because,
pretty
well,
good actors,
but
actors.
At least I think they would have known that she would have been a student of Vulcan martial arts and therefore would have beaten them efficiently and only up to the point that was necessary.
I don't know. I mean, I guess this is the point. So the shuttlecraft is rescued by the Discovery. And that shot of the tractor beam and looking up at the Discovery was pretty great. I have to admit, I really like that. The Discovery is a very handsome vessel.
I have a question about shuttlecraft in this era, though, actually. In Kirk's time, were shuttlecraft warp capable?
No, I don't think so.
Well, they had nacelles. They had warp nacelles. I mean, I don't... And actually, they went off on pretty long-range stuff on their own. But we'd never saw one going at warp, so it's kind of that bit of a question mark.
Right.
Until you see something definitively happen, you can't say it's definitely canon, but there was big old warp nacelles under the bottom. So
I guess you could argue these shuttles look different, so they're not the same model of shuttle that Kirk used. And I mean, it could just be that the Enterprise didn't have warp-capable shuttles, but it didn't necessarily... No one said that shuttles weren't warp-capable.
Well, you'd question why the flagship of the Federation or whatever didn't have warp-capable shuttles.
Yeah.
I don't think it even has... There's an episode where... The Enemy Within, I don't think the Enterprise even has shuttles because Sulu is stuck on the planet.
They all at least collectively forgot about them in that episode because the studio hadn't built them at that point.
Anyway, we're getting.
It's a minor thing. I think. Yeah,
I have to. The early stuff on Discovery, that first kind of scene where they, well, we meet Commander Landry when the shuttle gets brought on board. And I thought I really like Commander Landry in this episode. She seems like strong and capable, a military figure.
What do we think of the fact that she's quite derogatory about the people, the occupants of the shuttle? She comes on and refers to them as scum and animals in those early scenes.
My name's Commander Landry. I'm chief of security here. See, we're unloading all kinds of garbage today.
It's not some language I always expect, but. But, you know, it doesn't really bother me.
Well, that's the reason it was there, wasn't it? It was shock value, and it was to set up that these are not your common old garden members of...
Right, okay. So, yeah, they're not like the TNG command crew. You know, these are... These officers have got something else going on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not bringing it up to say it's wrong or right. I'm just curious what you guys were thinking.
I was surprised, but...
I always think it was there for the shock value, wasn't it? It was there to surprise you, and I think it fitted.
I think Landry's kind of a hard-ass, and she would have gone in there to sound like a hard-ass prison guard or something, so they knew immediately where they stood with her. They're not going to be thinking they're in for some sort of Starfleet pleasure cruise or something.
Lorca's probably briefed her on what he wants this to be in terms of their arrival on the ship.
Like he briefed those actors playing the other prisoners.
Maybe she just speaks to everybody.
So weirdly, they then get taken to the canteen for food with everyone else. I was a bit surprised by that.
But again, I think that's quite deliberately set up.
Yes.
Because they want to see her get to a certain point, and then so I think it's all set up. It's like, okay, she's essentially having a fight. Let's take her to the captain now. If she'd just been immediately taken off to the captain, I think she would have been a bit suspicious of it. And indeed, she does talk at the end that, oh, this is all set up. You've deliberately pulled me in. So, yeah, I just think this is just part of Lorca's little play that he's arranged. And I think Landry probably went along with it because she wants a chance to see, to get the measure of Burnham and how she fights.
Mm.
I think that's a sort of a tactical viewpoint she'll have.
Yeah, I got the sense that it was kind of a bit of a test for Burnham. Well, not so much a test, it was just a bit of an observation.
An assessment. Definitely in Landry's eyes, she was assessed. Because she says in the lift, Vulcan martial arts, and they should stick to logic or something like that.
Yeah, good diss.
So is that why the three prisoners are doing a bit of exposition when they're walking through the corridors going, ooh, black badges, what do they mean? I thought this was a science ship.
Maybe they get off the shuttle and they're like, oh, not scratch on the deck plates. This place is new. Mm. Oh, there's black badges. It's like this and this. It's like, yeah. Maybe Lorca thinks Burnham is like really clever, smart, and good fighter, but quite unobservant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe the side effects of the. I don't know. Yeah.
So yeah, Lorca. I loved Lorca. I thought he was fantastic. I'm just going to put that out there.
I thought he was good. He's an intimidating actor and playing an intimidating character.
No chairs in his ready room.
No.
Triples and fortune cookies.
Yeah. Which goes to show actually what a ballsy man he is, because he keeps a tribble and a bowl of food on his desk together.
He is not afraid of anything.
No.
Yeah.
I have to admit the tribble was one of my favourite things about this episode. I thought it was a great tie-in with a proper tie-in with existing kind of continuity.
Yeah.
I was a bit confused as Does anyone eat fortune cookies? Aren't they just there for the little bit of paper saying?
Well, that was his whole
trouble. Will lie ahead anyway.
That was the speech about how they've gone out of fashion because people don't look for the fortune anymore.
Mm. No. I just mean fortune cookies in general. I always thought you just kind of open them and read.
I eat them.
They're a lovely cracker. They're edible.
But to be fair, I love people like you, Rick, who obviously don't eat them, so I can have your uneaten cookie.
I just want the fortune, I think. Yeah, I mean, I haven't been presented with many fortune cookies, so I'm not well versed in.
I'm like, I know my fortune. I'm about to have a delicious cookie.
I like that opening scene. There's a cool scene where the lights are dim and he explains that he has had some injury. But there's a cool shot where his eyes are just kind of reflecting the stars.
I know.
I thought it was a nice.
I like his little sort of wry.
I like to think it makes me mysterious.
Right. Well, I guess. Yeah, I mean. I'm wondering whether maybe he was present when the Vulcan candle thing went off. The Klingon light.
Right, yeah, maybe. Maybe that
beacon
has something to do.
Went off.
But it's been 6 months of brutal war, so I mean, it could have been anything, I suppose.
His irises are messed up, right? His irises can't kind of.
Yeah, he said about.
Yeah,
lights, fast.
Changes of light have to be very slow for him. That's what you were saying.
Okay. So, yeah. But yeah, I thought that was he had a good introduction. He kind of carried some weight behind him. You get the sense that he was the captain of the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but he's also he's keeping a lot close to him, isn't he? He's not revealing more than he needs to. Very quickly, I got the sense this man is a game player.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's just that.
You sound like you're agreeing with me, but you don't sound like.
No, I'm not. I am and I'm not. I think things are kept to close to his chest initially. That he lets things go very quickly for the subsequent episode to this. There is a reveal that.
Mm. Don't reveal it.
I'm not going to reveal it.
But no, I know what you mean.
There's a reveal
yeah.
that kind of blows. Some of the things that happen in this episode out of the water is like, oh yeah, that's actually not as important as we were
thinking.
You know something about his character that then you kind of okay.
We're expecting him to have his little secret mystery for well, potentially all series or something. Mm. We don't know, but
yeah.
So it was a bit of a shock, but I think he's got more.
I think in this character, in this episode, he had gravitas. In terms of how you introduce new characters into an episode is that you kind of set them up relatively quickly. You give them certain characteristics. You give them, I don't know, certain things to say, and that kind of sets them up initially as for their role later on in the series. And I thought that this episode generally did have a pretty good kind of. Ensemble cast on the ship feel, which perhaps we hadn't really had in the first two episodes.
Mm.
They've been kind of pretty Burnham centric, whereas in this episode I think we had more of an idea of the show itself and its setting and most of the main players, and they all got enough time to kind of do some stuff and be that character for a bit.
I'd agree with that. Because we were introduced to the chief engineer guy as well, aren't we?
Is he chief engineer, or is he just engineer for that for his thing?
Well, we get no clue that there's any other engineering department.
But his thing is just at the end of engineering, isn't it? It's not engineering.
And it is a science ship, isn't it? So his project seems like it's the main science project. So yeah, maybe he's not.
He's engineer in charge of radishes.
We don't really see the warp core. And Discovery has a warp core. She has a standard warp drive.
Yeah,
but we don't see any of that. So
we just see the kind of we see the room a bit. We see that kind of tunnels-esque kind of chamber where a warp core would be. But the warp core is at the other end of that room. Essentially, we're at the
it's kind of like little annex. This is the engineering lab. I think they actually refer to it as the engineering lab at one point. So,
which does beg the question. Was Lorca always the captain of that ship? Because he's a very sort of militaristic captain.
Mm.
How would he really have fitted in on a science ship? in peacetime. So has he... And this isn't something that's been stated in the show at all, but I'm imagining that he's been put in command of this ship, maybe replacing another captain.
I would... Well, I mean, they said the ship was essentially brand new.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say there is a new class of science vessel being built, and the probably to serve as a testbed for the spore drive thing. The war happened, the project was accelerated, Lorca was chosen as commander of that vessel rather than a more traditional science vessel commander would have been. That sort of seems...
That makes sense.
And then Lorca, I think, is both excited at the prospect because he's got this big project there and this brand new ship, and then absolutely appalled that he's essentially playing nursemaid to a bunch of scientists.
I don't get that sense, though. I get the sense that he is thoroughly on board with all of the experimentation and the...
As long as it helps win the war,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. But he wants results.
He wants results by
the end of the day, damn it.
Yeah. It's like it's your kind of stereotypical military character. Brush cut, you know, by the book, kind of, you know, he says what he says. He's by the military book.
He's not by the book at all.
He's by the let's get this war won book, which is it's probably going to differ. Yeah, he essentially says it, win this war at any costs. So we veered off. We were talking about Lieutenant Stamets, and we started talking about the ship and the captain again.
Oh, yeah.
I
like that character.
Yeah, Anthony Rapp has been fantastic on social media and the whole build up. This last year, he's been a complete charmer watching Trek, getting opinions on it. He jumps in, even now, he's jumping in on his face on the Facebook group and talking to people and sort of, you know, when people. Anyone who goes in and attacks Discovery on social media, Jason Isaac tears them down.
Yeah.
Anthony Rapp is so nice to them that they run off crying. It's brilliant. I'm enjoying his case. He's kind of like quite grumpy initially, but then so was Captain Picard.
He reminds me a little bit of Dr. McCoy in that grumpiness.
He's very fixed in what he's doing, and he's clearly unhappy that Starfleet's co-opted it.
Yeah.
I've got more of a kind of the EMH vibe from him.
There is
a necessity.
He's
kind
of got a bit of a bitchy side. Whereas Dr. McCoy wasn't bitchy, he was just...
Yeah, Stamets is like, I suppose, like the doctor is like, all right, I want to do my thing here. This is what I'm here to do. I'm going to do this. Everyone else running about on the ship is just getting in the way. And that's kind of like the doctor. You know, this is very much how Stamets is, you know. He doesn't even like seeing a new person turn up. So, but I think he's a character that's going to soften and grow really nicely as we go along. So, I was right, actually. When I put forward after we did our talk about the first two episodes, I had my crazy guess that Discovery's run on mushrooms.
Yes,
I couldn't believe it.
Rick, why don't you please get out your own trumpet and blow it? Because you were right about that.
Oh, I'm going to put in a sound effect. I'm shocked that. Essentially, that kind of joke that you were saying was completely bang on.
What I like is that actually it's a completely ridiculous idea, but they just deliver it so well and make it sound actually quite plausible.
We need to debate the spore drive hard. But in episode 3, I was on board with it.
It's a fun, imaginative idea. I mean, in terms of plausibility. Who knows?
It's
a fun idea.
My take on it was that because they talk about the idea of marrying like biology with quantum physics, and years ago I read a book called I can't remember what it was called. Do you know what? I'm going to go and find it.
Okay, we can recut this.
Yeah.
Will is currently his bookshelf saying things like quantum biology, quantum physics, Einstein. There's just like 17 different Beano books up there. He's not fooling anybody.
Like lots of Kid Peppa Pig books. Maybe you were reading it and it's upstairs.
No.
Is it in the toilet? Were you reading it on the toilet?
Is it? What? How big is it?
It's not a toilet, but it's a paperback.
It's just a normal sized toilet.
Right, I've had a little aside, and I've found the book I was talking about on the bookshelf. Wait, sorry, Gemma found it. I rarely find anything in this house.
Yep.
Gemma finds all the things. It's called Quantum Evolution, Life in the Multiverse, and it's fairly impenetrable. I don't remember it very well, but it's about the idea that life, that evolution could have something to do with quantum physics, and the idea of probability and, you know, particles existing in two places at once and all that kind of really nutty quantum physics stuff could have led into how we evolved, like, the, you know, the very first kind of building blocks of life could have come together because at a quantum level. And so the spore drive, in my mind, the spore drive maybe kind of ties into that a bit, and the idea that maybe these spores exist at a quantum level, and does that mean that they both exist and don't exist
across the whole
galaxy? And then the ship can use that to...
Because in the episode, Stamets mentions panspermia,
mm-hmm.
but panspermia is more to do with the idea that comets kind of carry microbes on them, and then when they hit planets, they leave those microbes there, and that's how comets essentially spread,
right?
Kind of microscopic life across the universe. Mm-hmm. So it is a type of panspermia, I guess. The idea I got was that these spores, I guess the galaxy is, I don't know, 100,000 light years across ish. So it would, if these spores could travel somehow at the speed of light, they would be across in 100,000 years. And the galaxy is super old anyway, so even if they didn't travel that fast, the spores could be all across the galaxy.
Mm.
And I got the sense that maybe the spores are connected to each other through subspace. They have like the mycelium, whatever it is,
yeah,
is the kind of connection between these spores in subspace, and then the spore drive somehow harnesses that subspace into connectivity.
Okay, because they talk about kind of network. I'm sure they mentioned the word networks of these sort of spores across the galaxy.
How do you travel on spores?
Imagine a microscopic web that spans the entire cosmos, an intergalactic ecosystem, an infinite number of roads leading everywhere.
The veins and muscles that hold our galaxies together.
And then I was thinking of the kind of transwarp networks that the Borg have. They like the transwarp.
Well, I guess they have to be kind of like a hyperdrive, aren't they, essentially? Because it would have to be outside of our normal space, because you can only go as fast as light in normal space.
I'm thinking of the Voyager episode, Dragon's Teeth, where they stumble upon another sort of underspace network,
corridor,
which I think is hinted to be sort of a naturally occurring phenomenon. So the idea of like these super fast travel systems of networks of things all around space is kind of this is not unheard of in Star Trek.
And we've seen things that could work like that before. Like in the original series, I'm sure there's a few episodes where they come across various portals that can...
The Iconians, right?
Right, yeah, the
Guardian of Forever.
Gateway, And I'm sure in Next Gen we've seen that as well. And maybe those sort of gateways could use that sort of technology. Maybe even Starfleet have found something like that, and then they've discovered that that's how it's worked, and they're adapting it. I mean, it's a bit of a leap of faith and a bit of a stretch of the imagination. But if you think about it, warp drive is that as well. I mean, the idea that anything can travel faster than the speed of light doesn't work in science, because the only thing that can travel the speed of light is light, because it doesn't have a mass.
But and I guess anything in normal, but in the warp drive, the ship doesn't move faster than light.
You sort of fold space. But then visually, that's not how it looks on screen. But it is called a warp drive. So I guess that's.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. You already have to buy into that. But then I suppose as a Star Trek fan, you you're fully on board with the idea of warp travel. It's been there right from the beginning. And then the idea of a sort of a new drive comes along. But actually, it's no more improbable than the warp drive, I guess.
No, I think, I don't find anything... I know it sounds, if you say it out loud, oh yeah, it's a special way of travelling from mushrooms, it does sound stupid.
Yeah.
But in the context of the show, it's no more ridiculous
sounds
than
like
quite
the
rises
are on mushrooms, am I right?
Yeah. But yeah, I would say on this episode, I was just about on board with it.
Mm.
In episode 4, maybe not. But let's wait till we get to that point.
I thought that this episode, the interactions that Burnham had with the rest of the crew were pretty good. I thought that Saru is on the Discovery.
Yes, as first officer.
As first officer. I thought the interactions that he had with her were good, as the kind of as somebody that would remember what she did.
Mm.
And still hold her kind of accountable for that, I think.
Yeah.
Saru was harsh, actually, at a point. He seems to be being quite nice, like offering her a blueberry, saying that. But then there's that bit when he says to her, you won't cause any trouble, but if you thought about it, I'll do a better job protecting my captain than you did of yours.
I don't think that's harsh. That's on the money. That's entirely appropriate. She got her captain killed.
Yes, but if you consider, human feelings, it's harsh to say it like that.
This isn't just a normal conversation. We're on a Federation starship. She got several Federation starships attacked.
I don't think it's harsh. She didn't get attacked. I know that's the way they
she got a captain killed at least.
Sorry, they're telling the rest.
No, it was Giorgio's idea to do a mission to take out the Klingon ship. She was going to jump in a work bee and ram the Klingon ship.
Yeah, that's it. She was all ready for a suicide.
Under Burnham's mission, she had a lot more chance than. At the end of the day, they're both beamed over there to try and take Tuk from a prisoner, Tuk from outmatched her in combat.
Tuk governor.
Oh,
there's that joke.
Tukumar is dead. That joke apparently is not.
It's a good joke. I'm on board with it now.
It grew over the evening last time that we did it, and became the highlight easily of our previous set of podcasts.
I don't want to get into an argument about Burnham and what she did, but I don't know. I thought it was a fine line. I thought it's good to have that character that doesn't like. At Burnham, I think it's important, because I imagine that there are probably fans that think that what she did was wrong. So.
I think there's a wide consensus, and I'm in there, that she should not have mutinied by any stretch. But
there's another line he says where I'll make sure I do a better... So what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't think that it's the case that he doesn't like her. I don't think that figures. I think he thinks that she did a poor job. I think that's something different.
I suppose ultimately he doesn't really know what went on over there.
Mm.
And the fact that she has mutinied makes her an untrustworthy source in his eyes. Mm. So
well, there's a line where he says you were a good officer.
Until you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's another good line.
Zing.
Solid verb. Yeah, I really like Sarah. Sarah's my favourite character.
I mean, Doug Jones plays him so nicely and is so well. And when he's like walking along the corridor, just munching on these blueberries as he goes along, it's just like there's such a minor little thing, but it just adds so much to his character and his mannerisms around. It's like, oh, I'm talking to you, and I'm like, obviously we have our issues, but I'm really enjoying these blueberries as well. And so much of that is conveyed through, heavy makeup and everything. I think Doug Jones is doing an amazing job in how expressive he's making Saru through all that
stuff
on his face. Yeah, and I do look forward to seeing more Saru as we go along.
His shoes annoy me.
Horseshoes.
Do
they have little badges on them?
They have, I don't know. I thought
all the boots have little Starfleet emblems on. Yeah.
I don't know. It makes you wonder what the structure is of his foot is. So is it a hoof?
It looks like a hoof.
It looks like
Gemma's doing a hand, sort of a limp hand gesture, which
no,
I guess
not,
is my
like a kind of all duck, like a kind of like an all ducky kind
it's
of.
Not
yeah.
A, it's not a limp, I would say. It's kind of
no.
It's a hoof.
It's a hoof, yeah. Gemma's miming a hoof. Yeah.
Or you have an invisible bowl of popcorn.
Yes.
Or blueberries.
Or trying to
maybe,
eat
yes,
that
in
or anything.
Yes.
Kind of scooping it.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's not naysay.
Okay, but it makes sense that it's a hoof.
Stop saying hoof. No one's allowed to say hoof again in this podcast.
Which does also play into the fact that they were a prey species, therefore. Yeah, okay. Now hoof, yeah, hoof. But why does he have his front hands.
Why has he got hands in
his back hands?
He's like Mr. Tumnus.
He is.
Yes.
Space Tumnus.
He's Space Tumnus.
Yeah. Space Fawn.
Anyway.
We're introduced to another character, Tilly.
Hmm. Cadet Tilly.
Cadet
Sylvia Tilly.
She, to me, she was like a Lady Barclay.
Yes.
She was, kind of nervous and unsure of herself.
It's a little bit heartbreaking when she comes in and says...
It's so neat. They told me because of my special needs that I couldn't have a roommate, which is kind of a letdown because a roommate is like an automatic built-in friend. And...
Oh.
Yeah, she's all right.
I like her.
She's nice.
It's weird that she's got
crew quarters with a mutineer.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's just a case of they don't really have anywhere to put her. They're like, well, we've got one spare bunk, and the only reason that's spare is because we couldn't put anyone in with crazy old Tilly and her snoring.
She's all right.
You had a theory about Tilly. You don't trust her, do you?
I just thought it was a bit convenient to kind of put her with Burnham.
Mm.
And
why is that convenient?
Well, I just don't get why Burnham would be
juxtaposition of characters.
But it is a ship of kind of secrets and
but wait a minute,
why
is it any less preposterous than what Rick was saying about the thing in the canteen being a setup? Couldn't this be a setup as well?
Potentially, yeah. Actually, in terms of that, yes, you're absolutely right.
To what end?
But that's the question for any setup.
Could aren't we? My
canteen was simply see how she would react under certain situation, whether she would fight, whether she would buckle, whether she.
Surely the Tilly character could be like, let's get her comfortable with someone that seems to be all kind of innocent and nice, but actually break down her defences and getting to know her. And
do they want to know about her other than the fact?
But I don't know. That's the whole point of having like a thing that doesn't seem like the thinginess.
Yeah.
That's all I thought.
I think it's an interesting idea. It's interesting that you're kind of starting to second guess the characters because of the nature of the ship, and not it's not like on Next Gen where you 100% there's no point where you kind of thought Geordi's going to turn around and kind of screw everyone over in the season finale.
I think the Tilly character is interesting, but the scenes I liked her in the most were the scene where they're in the engineering lab and she doesn't want Burnham to stand near her, and the scene later on when they go onto the USS Glenn, and she can see the Klingon in the dark, and she's pretty on point.
She spots that, and no one else does.
I'm not saying that doesn't mean she's just capable. It did come across as someone that knows what they're doing.
Why would they have someone on that ship who isn't capable, though?
Well, yeah, but I'm just making a point.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not. I can't actually think of a thing to say you're definitely not right, apart from I don't want that to be true, because I'm quite fond of Tilly.
I like the Tilly character. I hope that she gets to do cool stuff and just do the kind of Burnham's friend stuff.
No, I think she'll get to do some
There's
cool stuff.
There's an interesting bit where she says, I'm going to be a captain someday.
I know.
She doesn't say, I want to be a captain. Or
I'm going
to. She just says, it's a fact.
She's definitely got a core of steel.
Yeah, I was going to say there's an inner fire and determination. So it's either fire or steel, we're not sure. But there's something in there.
Really, really hot.
That, yes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So I think that covers our new characters.
So what do you think of the kind of monster story?
The setup for that monster stuff is that the Discovery's got a sister ship, the USS Glenn, which is the same class. And I guess they've got the same technology as well, haven't they? They've got the same spore drive.
They're essentially, basically, as Stamets explains, they've split him and his partner up and their research to try and sort of double up the chances of successfully implementing the spore drive.
And then Lorca gets a message.
Well, we get messages. Stamets is getting messages from his partner on the Glen that they've had a lot more success
with some spore drive. Some kind of level of something that they've got. His
research partner does say to him, let's just say there are unexpected benefits to not growing your own. It's leaving us a bit of an open question as to what.
Then Lorca gets a secret message which we don't see, but it's about Eustace Glen.
Mm.
And is his? I got a bit confused. Does his ready room have a door to the engineering lab? Because he comes down into the engineering lab and talks to them straight after he gets that message.
Him walking down through the corridors would have been boring.
Saying hello to everyone.
But it didn't seem like he came from a corridor.
Came through the same door everyone else had come through, I think.
Hmm. Okay. That's
just a thing. I know, as far as I remember.
But yeah, so there's been an accident on the USS Glen.
It's one of those things. I've put me in mind of a bit of M'Pok Noor on Deep Space Nine, that we then switch to an identical set, an identical ship set. But this is dark and things are bad.
The ship's on a wonk.
Yeah.
Good old wonk.
I like that it's a whole new series, but they're keeping that tradition of the ship's damaged, so it is on a wonk.
And the crew have been. It's like the Philadelphia experiment, but in space, so all the crew are fucked up. I was shocked by the blood and guts.
Quite gory.
Yeah, and they've been kind of all twisted up a bit. Yeah, a bit like.
What did they describe it as?
They've been unspooled.
Yeah.
I like that. A bit of a monster movie kind of vibe to it. They find some Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great bit where, like I said before, Tilly calls out someone who's in the dark. Pretty cool.
Mm.
And this Klingon kind of shushes them.
I love it.
I love the shushing Klingon.
Klingon strides in and just goes shh. And everyone's like, did he just shush you?
And then he gets demolished by some kind of monster.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that stuff was all pretty good. It was exciting and a bit unexpected. I wasn't expecting a bit of a monster movie in this episode.
Yeah, it felt like there was this episode had to do a lot. It kind of had to have some kind of action adventure story, but it also had to introduce all the new characters and set up all of, the whole setting. And it actually managed the balance of that pretty well.
So someone gets killed on the Glen as well. I think it's... Is it a security guy we see?
It's unnamed security guy number 4 or whatever. The red shirt, essentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they managed to escape... Burnham distracts the monster, whatever it is, and then calls through some tunnels, and the other guys time to get back to the shuttle pod.
Yeah, and while she's crawling around, she starts quoting Alice in Wonderland,
I didn't like that.
It felt a bit forced. It didn't feel like she naturally would be doing that in that situation.
If the character was like claustrophobic or something, that would make sense.
Or needed something.
Yeah, if she was claustrophobic, that would make sense because it's something to distract you while you crawl through the tunnel. And maybe that's a therapeutic way. It's something about being in a tight space.
If you could see that she was trying to keep herself under control the whole time, panicking, doing this to keep herself going, then it would have worked. But she was just so deadpan the whole way through.
Yeah, it just felt like a bit of an obvious setup for them, the kind of Alice in Wonderland connection with Spock thing at the end. I don't know. It was just a little bit that didn't quite work.
I didn't mind it, but usually when they do that kind of thing, it's just
jarring.
It's just kind of it's like kind of. Just quick shorthand for character reads books.
Yeah,
that's it.
Books.
I like that.
It was nice.
I need to take Tilly's reaction and drop it into one of the book club episodes, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that she reads books, it's a book exists.
Real books.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that harkens back to original series episode Court Martial, where Kirk meets his lawyer.
He's court martialed for reading books.
when Kirk meets his lawyer, who loves proper paper books, and Kirk's like, you can have all these on the computer. And his lawyer, Sam Cogley, is like, books, young man, if I had the time, I'd show you a thing or two about books.
There were pictures of naked women in books. And naked men.
I like it that, like in Next Gen, this is a bit of a, you know, going off at a tangent, but in Next Gen, if Picard's catching up on some reading or something, he'll have like four or five pads. It's like, you can get more than one book on a Kindle, Picard. It's like, come on,
no, I keep each book on on a pad.
And I can put them all in my library. I've got all the space I need, I'm a captain.
Well, he does have all the space he needs. He's on a ginormous floating hotel.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. You can have a book on every pad.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit weird to be reciting that book thing in an under stress situation. Yeah, I mean, I think she's probably reacting to the fear of the fucking massive monster chasing her.
It just doesn't fit with her character. What you know of her character up till now just doesn't fit.
Yeah. What I think did fit very well, though, is the fact that she's into the Alice in Wonderland stuff, because it's been established that Spock's mum loves Lewis Carroll. That's actually a thing that's been said by Spock. And so that was a really nice moment when they mentioned that. It's like, yeah, they do pay attention. That's quite like a throwaway minor bit.
Isn't it an animated series as well where we find
yes,
that out?
Yes, it is. But it's like...
There's a little aside. What do people think of the superhero landing when she falls into the shuttle pod?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
It's all right.
I'd have
broken an ankle and fallen down, but you know.
Yeah, I don't want to.
I wasn't raised on Vulcan and trained in Vulcan martial arts.
That's true. You were. I can confirm that you weren't.
Because Bernard probably likes being cool.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. And you know, there's a lot of that I'll let go because it is a TV show and it's got to appeal to a certain action thing.
And by that point in the episode, I was fully absorbed by the episode. I was fully on board. And like, those kind of things don't kind of take me out of something unless I've got a whole heap of other nitpicks going on in my head, which I didn't in episode 3. And then, we sort of get back to the story with Burnham and Lorca. And there's a good scene where Burnham's talking to Lorca and he sort of basically does a bit of exposition around, well, she kind of calls him on the whole thing being a setup.
Yeah.
Her being there wasn't a coincidence. And I like the idea because he sort of suggests that because of her history, like she has mutinied and turned on her captain because she thought she was doing the right thing and it was like an attack against the Klingons. And he's sort of saying that's the sort of person that we need. That he wants on the ship, on his ship, to help fight the war. And I was on board with that being his reason for getting hold of her. But I don't think he's understood her as a person. I think he's kind of misunderstood what her motivation is.
It's kind of like a bit of a twisted reflection of the bit in Encounter at Farpoint, where Picard brings up the issue of Riker refusing to let a previous captain beam down because he thought it was dangerous. It's like, that is that point. I need that person who will stand up, who will respect the chain of command, but will stand up at this point when it's necessary. And it's kind of like, in a way, in a very different situation, a very different roundabout way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of I appreciate that there's like a slight twisted reflection of that, because I think Lorca is maybe a slightly twisted reflection of a Starfleet captain.
Yeah. And I have a feeling, and I hope that by the time this podcast goes out, this hasn't already happened in the series. I just have a feeling that at some point, Burnham is going to have to maybe take down Lorca, maybe do
mutiny,
the same
mutiny
thing
against
Lorca, but this time for the right reasons, and this time we'll be with her.
And I think
then she's gonna, at the end of the series, she'll be like the captain. And
I think that's definitely what I'm thinking. Mm. And I think because of her reputation, that's going to make that whole much more challenging, because she'll say, look, Lorca's doing this, and this goes against the principles of Federation. We've got to stop him. And everyone's going, that's crazy. You're mutinying Michael Burnham.
One bad mutiny plus one good mutiny equals no mutiny. It's a negative and a positive. You add a negative to a positive, you get nothing, right?
Yeah.
Unless we're talking matter and antimatter, then kaboom!
Yeah. Or time and anti-time.
Or pasta and antipasta.
Oh my god, that ruined my spaghetti.
Well, one thing I would say, I didn't get the... Why do they use breath to get into rooms?
It does seem a bit, yeah.
Because I think the breath stuff was just so that Burnham could get Tilly's breath and get in, because what if it was they needed an eyeball or a thumbprint?
Like,
was
she going to just
sorry, Tilly?
It's okay.
The idea that it'll only get the particles.
Everyone breathing on stuff is kind of a bit gross. Like smooch up the door.
And like wiping their fingers on things, though.
Yeah, I didn't super mind it, but
that whole little montage, though.
Mm. I like it, but I do think it's just a way for Burnham to do something rather than a thing that makes sense.
They could have done something. Yeah. They could have done a very similar thing just by having a small sequence of Burnham uncharacteristically engaged Tilly in conversation, and then when Tilly's asleep turns out she'd recorded her, and then she's just poking around on a pad for a while to do some voice thing, and then uses a voice print thing to get in.
Yeah,
because voice print identification is what we've seen, so they could have done that.
Yeah.
But really, this is quicker. This is easier.
Yeah, like
Kalis.
So yeah, breath, it seems a bit funny, but you know, it's the future. It's who knows what they're going to use for ID purposes. No, it's very easily broken, in fact, with a little bit of drool.
So I really liked that the episode ended with some real intrigue, and we kind of see that Lorca seems to have he's a nutty root, but it's like a nutty zoo.
A zoo of dead animals.
Yeah. And but one living one.
A really cheap zoo. Or a bad zoo.
Yeah.
Sorry to get on there.
Because it kind of bugged me a bit in the episode that no one had really asked, well, where's that monster come from that's on the other ship, and what is that monster? But then at the end of the episode, we get a nice little reveal that Lorca has just captured that monster.
I thought he was flirting with Landry. about doing something later on, but actually he's going to hang out with the monster.
One question.
Yeah.
If that monster is capable of slicing through bulkheads with its claws, how did they create a cell strong enough to hold it?
That's a really good question.
Does he just happen to have a cell suitable for that monster
proof.
in his crazy monster room that he's got?
If you're gonna have a monster room, I guess, then you need
the
force field goes all the way around.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
You just need a dark alcove to keep the force field within, I suppose.
That's the reveal, isn't it? This is going to be Lorca's nutty. He's a mad scientist.
Yeah, there's some real
background darkness.
And I really like at the end of the episode. That episode felt like it had done so much. It set up the tone of the show, and it had established a whole bunch of characters, and it had been entertaining, and it also left us with a bit of a tease as to what's going on. We can't really trust any of the Discovery crew, and we know that at least Landry's in on it, and it was really intriguing ending, and I was pretty excited
for episode 4.
Yeah, really excited.
So
and then we saw it. So, but
that's a discussion for another time.
Yeah, yes.
Well, that's the next episode, in fact.
Yeah.
This is our nutty room. This is our nutty room scene.
Yeah.
Yeah,
does anyone have any more thoughts on episode 3, actually?
I like this more than the first two episodes. It seemed the one that had the most kind of familiar Star Trek beats to it.
Yeah.
In terms of having an ensemble and being on the ship, which has the name of the show.
This is definitely my top episode thus far. It's it feels like we got going. We got the Discovery, we got the crew we were expecting, and now we're getting started. And
didn't we have fireworks last night?
Listeners, if you can hear that, I hope they're fireworks, or it could be.
Annoyingly, listeners, you probably can't hear that. The mics probably aren't picking up.
Well, this is at a point where we're maybe not talking about the show.
So sounded like we were just getting bored of what Rick was saying. We just interrupted the fact, oh, Rick, oh, sorry.
So what are you guys on about? What are fireworks?
So often.
Rick, we can hear the fireworks. Oh, now the episode's over. Sorry, Rick. You can't finish your point.
I knew that's what you guys have been doing.
Sorry, Rick, please continue.
I can't even remember what my point was. I liked the episode, it was great.
Yeah. Gemma, have you got any?
No, I'm trying to think of something. I liked the episode, it was great.
Cool. Right then, well, I think that brings us to a close on that episode, and we're really going right on and talk about episode 4, but let's end this
episode.
Don't
break here. What's the podcast equivalent of the fourth wall?
The fourth ear. Maybe the third wall. Because I guess
it's not a wall. I guess you can see a wall. Can you hear no. I don't know what.
Can you hear an ear?
That okay.
Walls have ears.
Hey.
Oh, fireworks.
Fireworks, Rick.
Quick, stop the recording.
Okay. Please join us for our talking about fourth episode.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening.
Goodbye. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10Backward, 10 being the numbers 10 and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10BackwardPodcast. And you can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal individual level, my Twitter is @nerdrick, and I believe you two also have Twitters.
I do. Mine is @WillTurland.
Mine is @MrImhotep. MrImhotep.
So please do get in touch, give us any feedback or suggest new episode topics, anything like that.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
10Backward?
Daddy, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10Backward. 10Backward.
The rabbit hole went straight on, like a tunnel for some way, and ended suddenly down. So suddenly that Alice had not a moment to think about stopping herself, but instead found herself falling down a very deep well.
Burnham, we're in the shuttle. What is your location?